Well, I'm going to ask Philip to come and join me now. Philip Sudell, and he's come from London today with his wife Jo. Come and join me, Philip. It's lovely to have you here. I think you're going to sit on that side. Is that right? There you go. And are you going to sing for us?
Sadly, I can neither sing like Henry nor bowl as quick as Henry, much as I'd have liked to have done.
Oh, but you used to bowl quite quickly, I think.
I think when you compare it to Henry, I'm sort of slow medium.
All right. You and Joe have been married 25 plus years, is that right?
I think so.
Was it love at first sight?
That's a very good question. Probably not, actually, from Joe's perspective. When I first met her, I was a Royal Naval officer, and she really wasn't interested in anyone in the services. I thought she was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But she wasn't interested in naval officers, no.
I won't ask you how you persuaded her.
I'd stop being a naval officer was half the battle.
That's a good answer. What kind of naval officer were you?
I was an engineer in the Navy.
And that's not boring? What sort of engineering were you
doing? Mechanical engineering. So we tended to hit things. The sort of electrical engineers tended to finesse things.
Right. So you were doing missiles or guns or stuff like that?
Engines and diesels and smelly things.
Normally. Okay. Okay. And you have children? What sort of...
Yeah, we have four children.
What kind of ages?
We've got... our eldest is a boy. He's 25 this month. And then a girl who's just finishing her degree up in Edinburgh. Another one who's at university in Southampton. And our youngest is working hard for A-levels. At least he's doing a very good job of convincing us that he's working hard.
And isn't he leaving school? All right, was he?
Yeah, in fact, today, yes, I think Hattie, our daughter, finished her finals at Edinburgh, and Sam had his very last day at school, so we have no children anymore at school, really.
Hey, big day. Makes you feel old?
No.
Okay. Cycling. Tell us about this cycling thing. Is it just the middle-aged man bit? Why cycling?
These questions are getting better and better. I've always cycled. So we've been in London quite a lot of our lives, and I've also always cycled and commuted. About 10 years ago, somebody got me into long-distance cycling. I'm by nature not a long-distance runner. So I'm like Henry. 100 metres and 200 metres is quite good for me because I got up momentum by that stage, but I can't last much longer than that. But I found with cycling, as I get older, I can't go quickly, but I can pedal for longer.
Now, you've been to Hull on your bike before, haven't you?
Tell us about that. Well, I have been to Hull. I mean, Johnny and I have known each other for a number of years, but I've never been to Kirk Ella before. But I've done some quite long-distance cycling. One of those things is a thing called London, Edinburgh, London, which is also in metric, 1,400 kilometres. Cyclists think in metric, for some reason, best known to themselves. And you set off from London on a Sunday morning, and I came over the Humber Bridge, I think, at about 9:30 on Sunday night on the way to Pocklington. And you go up to the left of the A164, and at the sign where it says West Ella, is it? We turned left and went to Pocklington. So I remember thinking, oh, Johnny must be up there. It's probably just a little bit late to drop in. So I just carried on at that point.
That's what friends are for, aren't they, who come that close and just keep going without bothering to call by. You've done more since then? You've done further since then?
That's the longest sort of single-handed one I've done. It takes about 4 days to do Edinburgh and back. But yes, I suppose I will try and do a 200-kilometre sort of as a day sort of happy cycle.
Sounds sore, doesn't it? Sounds painful to me. What's your day job that you can go cycling on a Sunday?
I can't go cycling on a Sunday, sadly.
You just told us you came on the Sunday.
Well, yeah, that was a week off, to be fair. Right. I have the same day job as Johnny. So the Church of England wonderfully pays me to tell people about Jesus, which is a great job to have. But normally Sundays are otherwise occupied.
Okay, and what sort of place have you met over the last few years in the church you serve in London?
I started off being the assistant in a large church in North London, in Muswell Hill. And then about 10 years ago, we planted a new congregation. We'd run out of times to start new congregations during the day at the church. We'd sort of split the morning and split the afternoon. And we had a Spanish-speaking congregation at 2. So it meant the next congregation we started had to be somewhere else. And the best place worked out being a pub. So we planted a church into a pub.
And you're there for 8 or 9 years?
There for 7 or 8 years, I think, yes. And we're now meeting back in a church building.
And you're going to speak to us now. I think someone's bringing round some, just a little outline
down
for
here,
us that needs to come round. Do you need that now or later?
Yeah, that would be great.
We'll have that come round. Harry, can you come and do that for us? You do still play cricket a bit, do you, occasionally?
I do play cricket a bit.
You haven't admitted that too loudly in this present company. You're involved in a club, aren't you? Is that right?
I play more hockey than I do cricket at the moment, to be fair.
How often are you playing hockey?
Hockey, in the summer particularly, probably at least once every couple of weeks.
I think you were playing last night.
I was indeed playing last night. We drew.
And you're a bit creaky today.
I'm feeling the effects of playing hockey last night.
All right. Over to you. That's all right.
Johnny, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Indeed.
Lovely.
It is great to be here. Johnny and I have known each other a number of years, and he's spoken so warmly about Kirkkeller. It's just a delight, actually, to move beyond that signpost that I saw a year or so ago and to be with you this evening. Thank you for your welcome. Thank you for feeding me so well as well. It is great for me as well to hear something of Henry's exploits on the cricket field and in other places. As well, I think it's a privilege for me just to come and hear some of that, Henry, so thank you for sharing that. I look forward to hearing more as the weekend goes on. Some of you, I think, will know that extraordinary quote from Bill Shankly, the great Liverpool manager, where he said, I think it was, "Some people believe football is a matter of life and death. I am very disappointed with that attitude. I can assure you it is much, much more important than that." Now, Bill Shankly had a particular thing about football, and we're going to find out tomorrow night a little bit more. But Henry hinted at it tonight, that his story is a story where sport became for him very much an issue of life and death. And I want just for a few moments this evening to take you to this account in Mark's Gospel. The sheet will be coming round. It's the account where two people encounter Jesus as they deal with very real issues for them of life and death. They're two people who are sandwiched very deliberately together by Mark in his gospel, so that we can gain, I think, from their very different and yet also very similar encounters with Jesus. They are two people, I hope, this evening, who will encourage us that here is a faith, a Christian faith, that is for everybody. You might be thinking, if you're here tonight and you hear Henry speaking a little bit about his own Christian faith, that you're not in the slightest bit like Henry. You've been born on a different continent. You certainly have no capacity to bowl a cricket ball at anything like the speed that he can. You can't sing. If you open your mouth, people will empty a room rather than fill it as Henry does. But here Mark takes these two very different individuals in this account. One, quite a significant man in his community, and one, a much less well-known and insignificant woman. And in telling their story together, helps us see that no matter what our background is tonight, no matter where we were born, no matter what age we are, indeed, as we found out tonight, no matter how long we've been married, whether it's no years, we're not married, whether it's more than 50 or even 60, as we found out tonight, whether we're facing the same issues or different issues, faith in Jesus Christ is not off the agenda for you. Two people in this story. One, if you look at the passage that's there on the sheet, is a man, Jairus. He's a synagogue ruler. And one is a woman who has a hemorrhagic bleed. She's just been bleeding for years, and she's insignificant. She's not named for us. And the first thing we need to recognize is they are extraordinarily different characters. And it's deliberate that Mark has sandwiched the woman's story in amongst the story of Jairus and his daughter who's dying. He is a man and she is a woman. Now, that is a difference, but it's not so much of a difference in our culture as it would have been in the culture of that day. Long before women's suffrage, to be a man was to hold all the cards, to be a woman was to hold very few of them. And he was a man and she was a woman. Jairus is wealthy. We find out later in the story, if you look through the account, that servants come from his house to tell him that his daughter has already died. Well, this woman is not wealthy. In fact, if you look at the story carefully, you'll see she's spent all she's had on her medical treatment, and that has delivered nothing. No NHS for her to fall back on in her day. Now, he is also the synagogue ruler. He's the one who has a degree of control over the environment in which he finds himself. She has suffered under the rule and control of many, including doctors who've done nothing for her condition, indeed made it worse. He is named for us as Jairus. He was a significant figure. People would have known him. She is anonymous. She's unknown and probably would have been seen as being irrelevant in her community. He is respected. And she probably, partly because of her condition that would have made her religiously unclean, would have been shunned in her community, would have been an outcast in her community. It is difficult for Mark to describe for us, in just these few verses, two more different people than Jairus and this anonymous woman. And I don't know tonight who you most identify with. I don't know whether you would see yourself as somebody significant in the community who most people would know your name, or whether you would see yourself as the person whose name everybody forgets, who no one really notices is there. But we need to see, as we look at this account tonight, that both Jairus and this woman matter to Jesus. He takes time out of his schedule, which is a schedule that's got real purpose to it, to take time with them. He goes with Jairus when he says, "Look, my daughter is dying. Can you come and help?" And when this woman interrupts his progress by touching him, he doesn't just say, "Oh, never mind, she's all right now." He stops and takes time to work out who she was, much to Jairus' chagrin, because he wants Jesus to get a move on to get to his daughter. He takes time for both of them. They matter to him. No matter that Jairus is significant and well-known and she is not, they both matter to Jesus. And you and I, whether we feel well-known or significant or insignificant, matter to Jesus. But we also need to see as we go through this that whilst they have their extraordinary differences, yet also they have so much in common. They're both in crisis, aren't they? Now, for Jairus, that crisis is a very acute crisis. He's just had pretty much the worst news a father could have. We've just heard Henry, haven't we, talking about his daughter Tara, isn't he? Who's just turned 5, is that right, Henry? Talika. Tara, your wife, my apologies. But that news that a daughter or a son is dying when you're a parent, well, that is a dreadful piece of news to hear. And it's just come upon him. His daughter is dying and he doesn't know where to turn. But the situation is chronic for the woman. This has been her situation for years, year upon year upon year, with no solution in sight. But they are both in crisis. Now, crises have the capacity, don't they, to be great levelers. You will know that from your own experience. And they also have the capacity to expose where our ways of thinking about the world and about ourselves, where our understanding of our own capabilities and capacities to deal with the situations that we face can sometimes be cruelly exposed as being deficient. We find that we fall short in areas that we hoped that we'd be able to cope with and deal with. It's certainly the case for Jairus and for this woman. Jairus, I imagine, was used to making things happen.
But suddenly no one that he knows who's under him can solve the problem he now faces. His daughter is dying. This woman has hoped that many people could solve her problem, but nobody has been able to. And she is worse off than when she started. Both these people need help. And they don't know who to turn to, and they haven't got a clue about the resources that they might have access to solve their problem. But for some reason, they turn to Jesus. They've heard about him. They've seen him do things. But the questions they ask of Jesus are big asks, aren't they? Now, I'm conscious I'm in Yorkshire. And I'm conscious that because Mr. Boycott has been telling us quite carefully that Mr. Graves is going to sort out English cricket, another Yorkshireman. I think that's quite a big ask myself. But this is not sport that we're talking with here. This is real life and death, the issues that these two people are facing. A dying child, an incurable terminal illness. And wonderfully, they both find here a common solution in the person of Jesus Christ. The woman touches Jesus and she's healed. Now, Jesus knows, we read, that power's gone out. He knows that something's happened. And he's really keen that this woman realizes that it's not just being near him that makes the difference. It's not just proximity to Jesus or proximity to Christians or church that makes the difference. But it is faith that has healed her. And so he identifies her. He takes time to identify her, much to the people who are hoping he's going quickly to Jairus' daughter's concern. He identifies and says, it's your faith, your trust in me. Not just touching me, it's not magic, but it's your trust in me that has made you well. And then for the man, secondly, for Jairus, he's told a little bit later on not to fear, not to be afraid, but to believe, to trust in Jesus. And indeed, Jesus demonstrates that that trust is well-founded. He speaks and he raises his daughter to life, even after some have come and told that she has died. Now, trusting people is not always straightforward, is it? We've seen it over the election campaign over these last few weeks. Many people have asked for our trust, haven't they? They've tried to speak sense, and yet I guess you, like me, have found that so many politicians, it's very difficult to get them to speak sense, to answer questions. We look for them to keep promises, but no matter which side of the political divide you are, there are very few politicians who can say they've kept all their promises. Their track records generally are not spectacular. But here Jesus is different. Jesus is the one who regularly speaks sense about the lives that you and I lead. Speaks accurately about human nature and human character. He keeps his promises. And his track record is without fault. It's impeccable. The Bible reminds us that he committed no sin and no deceit was found in his mouth. And Christian faith is about trusting Christ for life and death issues. For the issues of forgiveness that Henry was speaking about earlier. The issues where our own human capacity is left lacking. For the issues of the possibility of life beyond this life, beyond the grave, where simply all the medical capabilities we have simply can't deliver. Now, what Mark is telling us is that Jesus can be trusted for those big issues of life and death where our human resources run out. And it's for everybody. That's why he gives us these two very different characters in this account. Now, I don't know where your crises are. You may feel, I haven't got a crisis. Well, can I tell you, when it comes to forgiveness and those things, if you haven't, it means you're not really thinking about it clearly. Jesus says it's a crisis for all of us, the issue of whether we are forgiven by God. We can't earn it. We don't deserve it. I don't know whether your thinking about forgiveness and about the issues of life and death is an acute conversation you're having, or whether it's a chronic one, one that's been going on for years, one that you've suddenly thought needs addressing, or one that you've always wanted to address but never worked out how to do it. But I can tell you that Jesus is the one who will bring answers to those questions, that he is the one who can be trusted about life and death issues. And our intention over this weekend is to let, in a way, Jesus speak for himself, to point out to us why it is that he can be trusted for those life and death issues, and to show that that can be for each one of us, no matter what our background, no matter what our capabilities, whether we'd see ourselves as significant or insignificant. And I would love to encourage you to come and hear more as the weekend goes on, to hear more of Henry's story and how his Christian faith has worked out in those acute crisis situations that he faced, but also to read as we go through the Gospels and end up on Sunday morning with Jesus before Pilate and see how Jesus can be the one you can trust for those big issues of life and death. Thank you so much for listening tonight. Johnny, back to you.
Thank you. Well, that was very, very clear and helpful. Thank you. Let me just explain how we can go on from here, because we're at the end of the kind of formal part of this evening. If you're a man and you feel in need of meat, tomorrow morning, breakfast, we're here at 9, I think, for cholesterol special. So do come and join in if you'd like to. I think it would be helpful if you're able to tell Martin, if you're planning sort of now, wave at me, Martin, over there. Come and tell Martin, put more bacon on. We'll get sorted. So do join us then if you'd like to. If you're a woman and you've had enough cholesterol for the moment, come and meet Jo. Can you wave? Where are you, Jo? There she is. Philip's wife. Be here at 10:30 tomorrow here. Just turn up. Come and meet. Come and hear her story. Christian GP and can be interviewed about what it means to serve God in that kind of setting. And just talk about family life and faith in that context. Everybody's welcome to come back tomorrow. Henry will be here singing again, speaking much further about that sort of black arm band moment, the pressure where issues of life and death were in collision with matters of faith and conviction about what was right. And we'll go into that story in some detail. We won't do meat tomorrow night, all right? So the plan is to do pudding, the other half of our supper, tomorrow night. So the timing will be the same, the pattern will be roughly the same. We're here at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. If you'd like a ticket for that, grab one by the door. They'll sort you out by the door. I was going to offer you one of Henry's biographies at this point, but actually he sold them all, he tells me. Isn't that right? So there aren't any of those. What we can offer you is just a much sort of smaller leaflet written by our friend Roger Carswell. If you'd like one of those, do take them on the way out. We understand that Roger's sold all those. What's left in the country is here in the building, so do grab those on the way out. We're just part of Henry's story is spelt out plainly and helpfully, and do take one of those if that would be useful to you. Philip mentioned Sunday. We're going to be here together on Sunday morning, 9:15 or 11. Again, we'll hear from Henry just a little bit and further from Philip at that stage. The playlist will run to that, so we'll see what you're going to sing for us on Sunday morning. And people who say, look, I've been here tonight, I can't come back anytime this weekend. Well, in 8 days' time, we're going to just be here. If anyone wants to have a sort of straightforward question and answer session, do come back. There's a little card on the tables. And if you simply want to come and say, well, look, this is my issue. Either it's a sort of crisis issue, as we've heard, a kind of chronic issue, or an acute issue. Do come and raise any question you'd like on that evening in about 8 days' time. So thank you for coming. Thank you very much for taking part in the evening. Thank you to Henry, and thank you very much indeed to Philip. Let's show them our appreciation, shall we?